Hello, I'm Christian Cawley, and on this week's Podcast with a K, we are talking to the Doctor Who Infinity team. We welcome to the show Susan and Lee Cummings, George Mann, Gary Russell and Scott Hancock, chatting about the brand new game, Doctor Who Infinity, myself and James McLean.
It's all right, everyone. Remain calm. He's a doctor.
Although, judging by the look of it, might advise you all to avoid the fish.
I had once been a girl, a child, but now I was something else. Now I had a purpose.
Doctor? Oh, thank goodness. We've been trying to reach you.
As usual, it involves the Doctor, the TARDIS, and a funky bunch of aliens.
Welcome to the trap of Zabi Supremo.
It all started about a month ago. Things just started dying.
You will come and find me, won't you?
Beard of the Summer of Love. Barry had his own Summer of Love a year earlier.
You'll be seeing me again. You can be certain of that.
Doctor Who Infinity are with us. Susan Cummings and Lee Cummings of Tiny Rebel Games. There's George Mann, there's Gary Russell, and there's Scott Hancock. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Wow. Now, a few weeks ago on the podcast with Kay, Susan, we discussed a bit about Doctor Who Infinity. And you gave us a bit of a tease about it. And
yes.
You suggested we should do this again a bit later when the game's released. And as we're talking, it's released, I think it's tomorrow, is that right?
It's released in about 8.5 hours.
Wow, 8.5 hours. And you suggested we should do this again with one of the writers. You did only specify one of the writers. We're doing it now. And you've been good to you. You've oversold it, basically. This is an amazing collection of people.
I know. I have to say, Gary, Scott, and George, thanks for accommodating on very short notice.
No problem.
Doctor Who writers are like rabbits. You know, you ask for one and we breed, and then suddenly. By the end of this, there's 64 of us on here all going, I've written for Doctor Who.
And also, because you've gone for Welsh Shalland, it means we're literally round the corner from each other. Just going, yeah, I'll do that.
Except for George. George, I think you need to become a Welshman yet.
Yeah, move to Wales, George.
Welshman in spirit.
It is actually quite ironic, I think, that we say that, but apart from Lee, none of us are actually Welsh.
But we've lived here long enough.
Is that true? We said we're Welsh. We're
Welsh.
Passport to show that we are Welsh.
Honorary Welsh.
Yes.
Third of my life, Gary.
Third of your life, wow.
Okay, so now I've had a play. Let's try and get onto track, and maybe we'll see where we go with this later.
You wanted to be reasonable and sensible and well-structured. Oh, God help you.
We can start off that way and just see where it takes us. Let's get the business bit out of the way first. Doctor Infinity, I've had a play of it this afternoon, I'm pleased to say. I was initially a little bit, and then the tactical stuff came along, the strategic stuff. And that made me feel a lot better. And obviously, I'm not telling the listener anything about it here. Basically, there's beautiful kind of motion comic stuff. And then there's a duel game. And there's a lot of Missy. And it's quite... I was really surprised at how good it fit together. I was, as I say, when it first started, I was a little bit on edge as to whether or not it was going to be a successful sort of, I guess, in a way, PC variant of Doctor Who Legacy. But I think it goes beyond that.
I'm glad to hear that. I know I took a deep breath there when you said you played it. And I brought you all here on the podcast to tell you I absolutely hated it. Stop. Yeah, you know, it's funny. Lee and I actually just edited what it says in sort of listing on Steam tonight, because I still didn't feel like it encompassed it, because it's such a weird thing we've made. And as we were working on the comic book scenes that Lee had a very heavy hand in, like most of doing, and so I'm sure he's thrilled to hear you say that they're beautiful.
That's the art.
Yeah,
I make things move around; they make it look beautiful.
Is we watch some of these scenes, and you know, all three of the writers of these stories are here, and so I can say with them here, they're all really dark stories. There's some really dark moments in all three of these stories, and once in a while, Lee would show me something he'd just done, and I was like, "What the hell are we making?" There's some like dark.
There are some parts of these stories that I had to sit there and listen to the words like 30, 40 times.
Of a little girl screaming.
Of like children screaming or
dead animals.
You know, really horrific things. Yeah. And it gets to you in a way I never ever thought it would.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think this has to be, this is a nod to you, Gary, the only game ever made where you actually try to have heart resuscitation, six ways of heart resuscitation.
There you go.
To try and save a dying man.
We did.
I like to push out the envelope a bit.
So yeah, you know what we've been trying to explain to people who haven't seen it yet, and hopefully tomorrow everyone understands, is it brings all these things together. You know, it's not just what Legacy was. It isn't even the gameplay isn't even really what Legacy was. We ripped it apart and we built it, but it's also these amazing stories that these gentlemen have written, and the visuals.
Sorry,
I use that really loosely. And the visuals, you know, from these amazing comic book artists. I don't even know where to start on that. I always come back to David Roach and the fact that he drew everything by hand with sponges. And I think it speaks to itself.
Well, it's a hard game to explain because first of all, it's nothing like it. I haven't been able to find a game that's quite like this with this sort of strategy. And it's hard to explain. Like Chess with Daleks is the closest we sort of get, but that's still way off the mark. And it was built like it's further away from a normal gem game. Because normal gem game, you want about 6 gems, and it needs to be easy to recognize. This game has hundreds of gems per story. It's crazy. It's a weird representation.
I kind
of
wish we hadn't made them circular. Like the gems are just like a means to an end to advance gameplay and story.
Yeah, it feels to me very much like it's not a gem game, even though that's a mechanism in it. It's more like a new platform for telling interactive stories, I think.
But that was the goal. The whole genesis is how do you take the story first? Normally with a video game, you're constrained by what the engine can do or what the programming team wants to do. You know, your driving game or your first-person shooter or your third-person shooter or your something else. And then that defines the story. That structures the story in very specific ways. But Doctor Who needs to go anywhere. The Doctor solves its issues millions of different ways, and we had to replicate that. And the only way we saw of doing that was write the story first, and then the hard thing is make gameplay work around it, which is horrifically hard to do. Mm. But we found this weird loophole, which a gem game lets you do it.
Mm. It's really interesting in terms of video games, especially Doctor Who, which has had a history of dubious questions of value about how good Doctor Who video games have been and how you actually capture Doctor Who as a video game. And Legacy seemed to be a first attempt of actually sort of going, well, maybe it's not about mechanics. It's about, as I think you've said in previous interviews, you know, suddenly it's about stories. People want content. They want the stories. So that's quite interesting with it, isn't it? It's not the gameplay which drives the Doctor Who content, which has always been that tension, I think, video games.
Yeah, it's like you're getting to be the Doctor. You know, one of the things that you'll find when you play the game, and Christian, I mean, just wait, you've got so much ahead of you compared to what you could have gotten to today in terms of how the gameplay evolves and then changes between the stories. You kind of feel like you're getting to be the Doctor.
You feel clever.
You feel clever. Some of them are really hard. You have to, and one of the things we did 10 tips for a heavy upcom supposed to be coming out. And one of the things that I said is just stop and look at the instructions and then stop and look at the board because it's turn-based. So you're not in a hurry, and just figure it out. Because sometimes you have only one move, and so you you can try it again, but you got one move, and so you have to really be careful and clever and think and look and figure out what could possibly be going on here, and using the clues that I have, and that's something we never really got to do with Legacy.
Well, Legacy was a brute force game. You know, it's just how do you do damage to the team? What's the most optimal way of rearranging this board? Yeah. In this, there are no optimal way of rearranging the board. It's bonkers. Mm.
Legacy also had a good approach that you were very hands-on with changes, which again has been nice and new for video games, is that you can as developers augment and shift it a little bit in your direction.
Oh yeah,
Do you reckon that will be something you'll be looking at doing to some degree, sort of responding and shifting, or do you think it's quite a rigid format for you to move on with?
I think, well, one thing we've always had issues with is balance. How do you balance a game that like a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old need to be able to play? Because you need to be able, the whole point is to get through the story. So recently we added a button that if you fail a couple of times, you can just jump the level. You can just brute force you.
This is something we really thought long and hard about. But after months and months of pushing back and saying, this is too hard, this is too hard, this is too hard, it wasn't too hard for everyone. It was just hard for some people. And the mechanic is reasonably tricky enough that there's still going to be some people who just wouldn't get anywhere in it. We decided that if you fail three times, a button comes up, it just lets you skip ahead to the next thing. This isn't for money. This is just skip ahead. You've already paid for the story. And if you really just want to experience the story and hear Katie Manning or hear Michelle Gomez, then who are we to say no? You paid for the story.
So we don't think we'll go back and tweak difficulty. So we have that sort of escape hatch.
Yeah. And there's achievements for everybody else.
But it's built to launch new stories. And we've spent the last year getting a really efficient pipeline down so that we can make these stories in a reasonable amount of time. So you're not waiting years for the next video game. We can do stories, you know, we have probably another three by Christmas.
I think if anything, we'll look at other ways we can play with this platform. Like, we keep getting asked about whether we would ever do a choose your own adventure sort of thing. I could see us deciding to play around with something like that, where you have some, you know, where there's some changing to the story as opposed to it being a strict linear narrative.
And sorry.
I was just going to say, is it easy for writers to? I mean, obviously the whole thing here is that the writing comes first. But is there still any issues with writing, especially writers here in this tiny little big room, in sort of feeling sort of that it's a video game, I've got to write it in a certain way, or?
Well, that's a good question.
I'd be curious. I think
each of those should take that question, answer, because I want to hear this.
George, you go first.
Okay. Yeah, I think certainly with the first one, I really felt like my first one, I've really felt like I was feeling my way in terms of trying to create opportunities for the guys to inject interesting gameplay into the story. So, I mean, Susan and Lee have both been hugely encouraging in the way they've said, you know, the story drives this. You write the story, you tell the story the way you want to tell it. Make sure it's a great Doctor Who story with great characters first and foremost. And then we'll put the gameplay into it. But I think you can't help but be conscious of the fact that it's going to be a game. So where are the opportunities? And it's something that, you know, Lee and I talked about quite a lot in terms of, you know, we've got opportunities to hack into Daleks in the first games. So you want to make sure that you're creating those story points to allow that interesting gameplay. So I'd certainly say it was something I was conscious of, but it isn't something that ever got in the way. If, you know, I never had to think, oh, I can't do this with the story because I have to put gameplay into it.
Good answer.
Yeah. How about you guys?
What else can I say that George didn't just say? From my point of view, I'm not a gamer in any way, shape or form, because I'm, you know, really old and got one foot in the grave, and it's all a bit beyond my poor little adult brain. So I came at it from the story point of view, and sort of every 2.5 pages, I would put in a situation where I thought this will be gameplay. So I set up the Doctor or Joe or whoever that they had to solve something, that there was a mystery at that exact moment that required some, if you like, physical ingenuity. And then would used to put in brackets, Lee, you write the gameplay, but what's got to happen is it's got to get them from this point to this point, and then I'd write the next point. And I just did that all the way through. So I wasn't able to specify this game will use these jewels in this situation. I just said, you know, here's the game. What this has got to be is the Doctor using the sonic to discover this, or Joe using a prop to hold up this, and if they're not careful, the world will come down on their heads, and left it to Lee to actually make that work as a game, which I think was probably quite evil of me, and made him work very hard.
I mean, I think George had a slight advantage because he'd done some legacy stuff before, hadn't he?
Yeah, I was cheating.
Yeah. So you sort of do it with all that experience, whereas I think we were handed your sort of templates.
And
this is the format. But yeah, in terms of the story, we were just sort of invited to pitch storylines. And then we all had a big meeting in Cardiff, which was lovely. And sort of came away with this idea that we could just do as much in the stories we wanted. And the story would lead. So there are points where, you know, the story really takes hold and you immerse yourself in the sort of comic book panoplies and all of this. And then you get a load of quick gameplay as well. You know, the story is the focus. And as Gary was saying, it was great to be able to go, right, here's an action moment or a point we could have some gameplay, and then go, you guys tell us what you need and implement it. And again, similarly, you to turn around to us and go, oh, we can see an opportunity here to shove a game in. Can you just tweak this? But yeah, it was just like writing any normal story, really.
I'm very impressed with the fact that Scott just used the word panoply.
I was thinking the same.
Ever come across before using this game, and I think now we have to find a way to use the word panoply in general everyday conversation.
You know, as I said,
I wanted to say that I think one of the most fun bits of gameplay came out of your story, Scott. I don't think you've seen this bit yet, but for a while there, we had these bar fights, which kind of like we were, you know, there's these scenes in the bar with the locals. And Rose, this is very early on, I'm not really spoiling anything here, with the locals and Rose, who don't really like the fact that she's not local. And there was a bit of time that it felt like you were flinging bottles at each other, but it just never felt very Doctor Who for there to be a bar fight. And eventually this evolved into them flinging insults at Rose and her having to turn the insults on them. If she's offended too many times, basically you lose. And it was so fun watching that come together and the fact that she had to find a way of flipping fences back on the local, basically.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
George's description earlier of you know, having a story with gameplay in reminded me of some old 8-bit games, some very 30-year-old video games from the Commodore 64 on the Spectrum. The names of which I can't really think of at the moment. James might recall, but it just so happened that I have in my hand. I say just so I have my hand. It was behind the sofa. A book from the same period called Interplanetary Spy. Now, these came out around the same time as the Choose Your Own Adventure book. And they were basically along the same format, but every other page, or indeed every page, there would be some sort of puzzle challenge that would then carry on the story. And I think there's some similarities there with this.
Yeah,
there absolutely is. I have Space Olympics in my hand. Interplanetary Spy, Space Olympics.
Wow!
I knew you were going to say that, George. I knew you were going to know exactly what Chris was.
Yeah, I've clung on to this DV since I was in the first year comp. And
what number is that then? What number is that? I've got one. You've got four. I've got 1, 2, and 6.
I've only got 4, but it's a good one. I will say that.
It's like the key to time.
Well, that's the thing, and I probably said this like too much lately in trying to explain it, is that when you think about Dungeons and Dragons, nobody really questions anymore the fact that you use dice as the only mechanism to solve these situations. If you have dice, that's all you really need, and story. And in the same sense, we see this I hate calling it a gem mechanic, puzzle mechanic, tile mechanic, being able to manipulate stuff on screen because it feels so good, especially on a mobile device, is a really nice way to do it. And it allows us, like Lee was saying, to have like an infinite number of types of situations where if we were limited to like a 3D game engine or something, we couldn't do it. We'd have one sort of thing that the engine does really well and everything would have to be based around that. Whereas here, we can do anything the hell we want. It's really just a matter of how do we extrapolate that into a board and what kind of tile set can we build around that?
Well, I made this argument. I did a talk last year, I think it was, on video games, and I based it around Doctor Who. And one of the things I was saying is it's funny with video games that we have this thing that they've got to be sort of almost like identical constructs of what they tie into. Otherwise, they're seen as cash cows or substandard. When yet, when some of us were a lot younger, we would have, I don't know, like a stick that would be a horse or a stick that would be a gun. You know, you'd have something which would bridge the imagination that didn't have to be identical, although we damn well wish they did. But that was the sort of thing. The video game sort of has a special, has a sort of snobbery that, especially with tie-ins, that if they're not like the idea of them being 3D immersive, perfect, that sort of world, that they don't sort of carry anything. When I found when I used to play Legacy, that the story did somehow, and that the gems did sort of work, that your brain did the rest.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? And as much as people say that they want that, I mean, I've been making video games for 20 years. There was a very long stretch of very forgettable video games that, you know, at least for the time, looked like the movies, but they were terrible because all they were was a rehash of the movie, and you already saw the movie. So who the heck needed that?
I worked on the Doctor Who Nintendo Wii video game back in 2010. And I remember for that, I was doing the game assets. I was doing the intro and outro scenes for each level. And for that, the idea was that they were going to be moving storyboard sort of mechanics like you've sort of got going, where the assets and elements move and shift. But there was no money in the end, and they reduced it all to the most basic stuff. And the script that had been done for it was pretty much thrown aside for the game. So it's kind of interesting to see it going the other way around now, and you're getting those bits which were at that time tossed aside because there wasn't time to do them, taking the forefront, and that sort of being very much part of the importance of this project.
Yeah, it is really interesting. It's funny, and the word is sort of getting out that we put in this mechanic that lets you skip a board that you've punished yourself and you've died a few times. And it's actually I've heard people saying on forums and stuff that that's making them more inclined to get the game because they really love Doctor Who, they really love Big Finish, you know, which Gary and Scott are both a part of, and they really love the actors and things like that. And so they love the fact that they can get these stories that you can't get any other way, and they'll try the gameplay, but if they have trouble, at least they won't be stuck and they won't feel stupid.
That's a good move. Do you also have, I mean, we talked about the writers. Did the artists have any issues translating over to this medium? Because I think you said in one of your interviews that they were sort of, there's a lot of artists who had never worked and done assets for video games before. But there are sometimes certain criterias, isn't there? Or were you able to ignore those and just let yourselves deal with the criterias to get everything to the right sort of standards and stuff that you need to actually implement?
I know we should have had this be even a bigger, crazier group and brought in Mike and Dave and everybody. the art side was so much fun because the caliber of work, you know, they're all major comic book artists. And I'd wake up every morning so excited and eager to see what was in my inbox, what had been uploaded in Dropbox the night before. You know, they're all really different. Mike Collins, who also is writing the fifth story, The Horror of Flatholme, he's a storyboarder for the show, so he really thinks that way. So I guess my point is that everyone had a different thing that they were really good at. Mike was really good at making things as reusable as possible for me so that I could find lots of ways, which worked really well because George's story is by its nature longer than everybody else's. And so we had to really figure out how best to use all the assets. Gary's story was drawn by Dave Roach, who's a traditional artist. So he is the most painstaking, laborious process of drawing this stuff on paper and inking it and sending it to Dylan Teague, who colors it. And each one is like a watercolor painting that I want on my wall. Like one was prettier than the next. And then Neil Edwards drew Scott's story, and he works on Assassin's Creed and DC stuff, Marvel stuff, and his stuff was altogether different from that as well. And then, of course, we have two more stories coming, and Silent Streets is teased at in the trailer that's coming tomorrow, and it'll be the first chance to see some of the art from it. And that's Emma Vicelli. And Emma is just out of this world. I can't even begin to explain how cool she's made the Panoply scenes for us because she's given us such subtlety to the movements of the characters and stuff. So they were all really, really different. Like the visual styles couldn't be more different from story to story to story.
How did you assign writing? Did people have to pitch, or do you have particular things that you wanted to do and you went to specific authors?
We had to come up with some high-level story ideas when we first started this. So Lee came up with five high-level stories, like paragraph stories that we said to BBC, this is kind of what we have in mind, this doctor, this ally, and this is basically what it is. And then we started talking to writers, and everyone really acclimated, I have to say, to one or the other. It was pretty obvious who should do what. You know, George, when it comes to Daleks and the 12th Doctor and Missy, I mean, George, I don't think anyone has ever written funnier dialogue for Michelle Gomez than you have. You should be like her personal writer.
That's very kind of.
I have tears coming down my face.
We still laugh. Like, after hearing some of these lines 50 times, we still laugh.
And I found the lines weren't getting played enough, and so I played it up, and it's just, oh, God, when she starts talking about the inside of a Dalek and how it's a bit like...
Blancmange.
Like Blancmange.
We do have, yeah,
Dalek talk in our stories, just to point that out.
Yeah, there is some Dalek.
It's quite dark. I'm surprised the BBC approved some of it.
Gary and Dave Roach immediately acclimated to doing Katie Manning, their Doctor story. That didn't take any discussion whatsoever. Scott, you seemed like well into doing a 10th Doctor story right from the get-go with Rose. No one was like, no, I want that. Everyone really quickly acclimated to a story and we got on with it. I don't think there was any confusion over who would do what in the very beginning, which is interesting.
No, well, I remember I was drawn to horror, and Gary, I think, just went, can I have Zarby in it?
just you wait till you watch Joe Grant being chased around by a big oversized Zarby on screen.
I just wish it could have been done on screen, to be honest, but...
Yeah. and you know the voice of the enemy is her as well.
Oh, she does it all.
Yeah, she does.
Try stopping
it. When I was writing it, I was very keen to give Katie as many different options to do voices as possible. And what was also interesting is she's Joe Grant in two different time zones. She's Joe Jones of the Sarah Jane Adventures telling a story of Joe Grant in the 1970s. So, you know, she enjoyed having the sort of insight into both of those versions of the same character. And then, yes, she got to go mad and over the top as the Zarby Supremo. Because you can't go wrong with the Zarby Supremo. It's just, you know, it's the ultimate villain as far as I'm concerned.
Was that a worry? Because a lot of people would say maybe you could go wrong with the Zarby because they are an interesting villain. Were they difficult to tackle?
No, they were dead easy. Because I've wanted to do Zarby and Minotra for years. It's just something I've always wanted to write about. And this was a great opportunity to do it live as opposed to sort of in prose or something, and therefore you can bring them to life. And you know, the gift really, I suppose, because I'm very old school, the gift of the 1965 Doctor Who annual with the lair of the Zarby Supremo just said, haha, here's a Zarby that can talk. So that immediately becomes a great deal easier when you've got a monster that can talk. And I just based the Zarby. I love the Web Planets pieces. It really is just wonderful. But I have to say, I based sort of the background and everything on Bill Strutton's novelization more than the TV series. You see technology in the game that was previously only seen in the illustrations in that novel, because they're fun. And I wanted to have fun. I think it's Doctor Who should always be about fun, and you know, it can be dark and scary, and my story, hopefully, I hope it's a bit dark and scary, not least because it's all about poor kids being trapped in dark and dingy places, which is never, you know, bright sunshine. But, you know, you can also have so much fun with things like Zarbis and Minoptera because there's something kitsch without being bad about 60s Doctor Who monsters, and giving them a second outing and giving them a try to be even more scary than they were in 1965. Good thing. I think I just like sad old Doctor Who monsters that nobody else likes.
But it really feels like a love letter to Katie Manning, you know, as much as anything else, which, you know, I'm a huge Katie Manning fan. So that's one of my favorite.
An opportunity for me to sort of, because I've known Katie for years and I know the kind of thing she likes doing. So it was good fun to really get to town and give her the lead on something. You know, it is definitely Joe Grant's story with the Doctor around rather than the Doctor and Joe Grant just being the assistant. She leads the emotional journey in that story. I've just used the phrase emotional journey. Please kill me now.
How many gem games have emotional journeys? See?
Now, you know, in Scott's story, we feature Kellen Jones as the narrator. He's a new character. And he has, honestly, the most exquisite voice. Our audio director just loved doing the post-processing on that.
Okay. Beside the fact that I've just... realise that the phrase Zarby Supremo sounds like a British Leyland saloon. Maybe it's just me. You're releasing.
I think it's more of a Skoda, surely. If it's Zabi Supremo, that's far more Skoda.
Absolutely,
I'd buy that.
Absolutely right. I've been kindly given keys to the first and second story and the third story. So who's behind those? Who's responsible for those?
Well,
the first story is George.
That's George, isn't it? Yeah.
That's me.
Invasion of Time. The second story is The Orphans of the Polyopter, which is Gary.
Right.
And the third story is The Lady of the Lake, which is Scott.
Right, okay.
Do you dare think... I've always wondered this. Do you think of continuity in terms of that sort of pressure, which is certainly on other media forms, and obviously the main show, about sort of canonicity? Do you sort of fit these within that sort of weird, nebulous continuity, which fans are very keen to rigid?
Gary and I both used to do approvals for BBC Wales, where we would review all tie-in media to make sure there weren't any contradictions with continuity and to make sure it all gels and fit. And so I think our natural instinct is to make sure everything works. And I'm sure, George, you've obviously submitted stuff and it goes through the process.
I mean, I think both of you guys have both accepted and rejected my pitches on that.
Scott actually used to review Doctor Who Legacy stuff, to be clear.
But I think, I'm a big believer in that continuity shouldn't get in the way of story. And if it does, you probably should tell a different story. Because I don't think you should knowingly break continuity. I think, you know, it's there to be respected. It's what's gone before and what is Doctor Who to so many fans. But I also think, you know, on occasion I've tried to tell a story and bend it round continuity to the point it breaks. So I think you do have to find those opportunities. And thankfully in Doctor Who there's so many of them that you know you're not often in that position.
I think most stories don't require continuity because you're telling brand new adventures and you know, that's where you can touch upon them by bringing back things like the Zabi. As you say, you're doing it for a very definite reason, so you're going to respect the source material.
Exactly.
Yes, you're not going to suddenly have the Doctor running around with a gun shooting everybody.
Or maybe we will.
we've now put the overruns of all things in two games.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Gary was.
I said thanks to you. We've now put the Ogrons in two games.
Oh, I love the Ogrons.
Yeah.
Can't do dialogue for them, but
live master. No complications.
You don't have an Ogron saying no complications. Oh,
I love that line.
Something very wrong with.
We should have done that. If the players
need to check it, I'd have said, "Where's the Ogron saying no complications?"
That would have been brilliant. Every time someone passes a level, an Ogron just goes no complications.
Should be in every story.
Yeah. Go on, play into it and do that now.
In every single story, every time something happens, just this little ogre on a head pops up, irrelevant to which story it is, and just goes, no complications.
It's still time, Susan. It's not live yet.
I know, we can't ship the game now.
6 hours, quick.
Damn it.
I'd love to meet that actor. I'd love to meet him and see if he just sort of sits staring awkwardly in the mirror every day, thinking, you know,
must be convention, surely. Why?
No. He's an ex-con. He was a prisoner.
Was he?
Yeah, he was a big guy, rich something.
And they threw him in jail because he was so tall.
It was the 1970s, you know.
Just what you're saying there about quickly pushing the update out. What happens in the process? How long does it take to actually say something needs patching? How long does that take to go through? I know it's ridiculously technical and dry and possibly a bit boring for the conversation we've had so far, but I am intrigued to know what the process is there. How does that work? How long does it take to do that?
It depends on the platform.
Right.
Really.
So so you're just focusing on Steam with this game?
No, just tomorrow we're focused on Steam. Right. We'll be going live on mobile at the end of the month.
Oh, cool. Okay.
With the fourth story, hopefully at the same time.
Yeah, with the fourth story, The Silent Streets of Barry Island, should hopefully be coming out at the same time or soon after. It's pretty straightforward. You know, we have this really distributed team of, I don't know, 25 people working on this project all over the world. Our tech team's in Taiwan and I spend most of my days talking to them. And we've got a pretty good process between us for pushing this sort of stuff live. If we wanted to go back and record some Ogrons, you know, we'd have to get the guy out of jail. We'd have to write the
I don't think he's in jail anymore. I think he came to 1972 to be an Ogron. You know, I don't think they put him back in again afterwards.
We have to bust
him
out.
Play stores almost instantly, isn't it?
Yeah,
iOS store
is getting close to instant. It doesn't take very long.
It's mostly testing. You know, you don't want
to
roll out.
We've gone through a lot of testing the last few months to get this experience to be as rock solid as possible.
Okay. James?
Okay, so basically, you haven't got a question. So you can turn to James. And hope James has got a question.
I'm doing typing for research purposes right now. That's why I said James.
James.
Well, you know, another thing we could talk about, coincidentally, is that almost all of the actors were recorded by Gary or Scott, with the exception of Michelle, who we recorded in New York with my friend Naveed. But that, I think that might be interesting to talk about because they did all the voice sessions.
Oh, wow. But you do a bit of voice work for Big Finish, the pair of you, don't you?
Yeah, I seem to, seems to be my thing. Well, Gary kicked off Big Finish,
yeah,
and I learned all my directing tricks from him. So when this project first came up, I think we had chats with Susan about where would be good to use in terms of studios and the process in terms of getting scripts together for the actors and things like that. And I think the first session with Bella and Ingrid.
That's right, at Moat, yeah.
And that was great fun because I know Ingrid had obviously done a lot of Big Finish stuff for the unit series, but Bella was completely new. And there's always that slight concern with child actors because radio is generally not a medium that they tend to work in that much. But, I mean, she was brilliant. She really responded to direction well and loved the opportunity to... is it spoilery? Can we cut stuff if I say something spoilery?
We shout redacted over the top.
I can cut something if necessary.
Well, she enjoyed playing around with certain voice effects. Let's put it that way.
Christian, you know who Bella is, right, from Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Yeah. So what happened was Lee and I were watching Game of Thrones one night, and for a while, this character that I also won't spoil was going to be a male part, and we watched this speech that Bella delivered in Game of Thrones, and at the exact same moment, we looked at each other, we're like, that's Freya.
Well, we hadn't named her.
We hadn't named her. Whatever she was called at the time, that's
George
her.
George named her later.
We emailed George and said, could it be a female instead? Which, of course, George said yes. And she was thrilled to do it. She loves video games. She's young. And she's so talented. And she's been so lovely ever since. She's constantly chatting with us on social media and stuff. And she's a really, really talented actress.
How's the have the BBC had any input with this, or do they just let you get on with it with their baby?
They mostly let us go with it these days. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think we've got any script changes. Did we cross over?
No. I mean, our producer Peter Hickman there has been a friend and colleague of ours now for, you know, most of the time we've worked on Doctor Who. So he really feels like part of the team. He wrote all the scripts. There weren't a lot of changes. Same on the art side. I mean, all the artists are sort of have, I think almost all of them, if not all of them, have worked on Doctor Who in comic books. So I don't think anyone deigned to make too many changes on that side. So it's been a pretty easy process. I think BBC's really excited about it. I mean, I've been in there to show them the game, and everyone was really supportive.
Is there any... this is for the writers, and they can surprise you if they like. Is there any sort of particular story or something that you're thinking of sort of throwing out there that you'd like to do in the future? Ogrons can be included, I guess. I think we could.
I want to tell the story of the Ogron who finds something complicated, and the whole game is them just trying to reach a point of no complications.
The Ogron complication.
Yeah, go on.
George is actually writing another story.
I think the obvious thing to do in a computer game And I say this having been involved in a lot of Doctor Who computer games since about 1994. And, Destiny of the Doctors. And have never done this. But the obvious thing to do in a computer game, surely, is the Celestial Toymaker, which I think would be a very interesting way of leading into dozens of different alternative types of games, or indeed, in a sort of key to timey way, have the Toymaker in every single computer game, and he's sending them off on different missions through time and space, and so then you go into actually having that game, but the link between them all is the Toymaker, and then you have a sort of big showdown in the last game with the Toymaker. That's just jumped into my head.
Sounds amazing.
There you go, Susan. That's our macro.
Like crabs everywhere.
The macro. We used to talk about the macro a lot.
The macro, just somebody being chased by the macro for 60 or 70 pages.
And George is actually writing our sixth story as we speak.
Indeed, yeah. Which
hopefully it is.
Yeah. George, how are you doing that story?
I can't really spoil it, I guess, but it's a particular doctor that I've written for before, and I've been desperate to bring back, or to write about again, rather. So I'm very excited about that.
And this will be the first one that actually takes place wholly somewhere else that isn't Earth. All five of these stories.
I don't spoil too much, but it's like a spaceship story.
Yeah.
Broad level. It's one of those.
Big interstellar vessel thing. And that was the brief, really, wasn't it, from you guys? It's like, let's do something slightly different now and go out into the universe with a different story.
And I think the other big difference is the doctor and the companion in that story, we're going to try and have it pretty much be wholly narrated. So no text. It'll be more about the interaction between the doctor and the companion.
Yeah, which is a huge amount of fun to write.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping from this, what people will get will be obviously that there's this interesting dynamic where stories take priority, yet the game still actually has a function within the story, which helps enrich both. That there's going to be a diverse amount of authors that they are aware of and probably admire, and the same with the artists as well. And maybe also, it's worth pointing out that you're also very good with legacy. You were very good with user interaction. Because I remember when I used to play it, that there was times when you were very hands-on.
We always have been. We've always really wanted to get to know everybody who plays our game. Maybe it's our ego. Maybe we just love the fact.
I think it's just a wonderful thing that you can do with technology these days. You can go up and say, hey, we have a Discord channel. I went on to this. Just ask me questions. I have some time waiting for the grill to go.
I've never really understood why people don't, you know?
Rockstar, we were hidden behind layers of management who hated people getting recognition because they would get poached.
Well, there's that. But beyond that, you know, I mean, as developers, sometimes you have to make decisions which aren't popular with everyone, you know, for the sake of balancing or whatever. And when we did Legacy, we had to do things like that. We were really upfront and honest and spoke to people. And the problems kind of go away when you do that. People just want to know what the hell's going on.
And it almost creates a community as well there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, God, when we launched Legacy, a year after we launched it, or 2 years after we launched it, I started getting a birthday card every year from people who played the game. I'd get like a 300-page birthday card.
Yeah, it's bonkers. Yeah. And we love them just as much.
Yeah.
Well, that must surely enhance the way you're able to enhance the game, I suppose. You know what people are liking. They're telling you what they like. You've got that close feedback. So you can potentially shape the game towards what people are wanting from the game.
Definitely. I mean, we have a group of beta testers sort of pulled from some of our most loyal players, mm-hmm. who've been playing Infinity for probably 3 months now and giving us feedback. And if this game is reasonably bug-free, they're a big chunk of the reason why.
Cool. I'm just browsing the store page on Steam at the moment. And on the 5th, on the 9th of May, it was announced that this story, written by Gary Russell, as his final Doctor Who story.
How many final Doctor Who stories have you had now, Gary?
Just this one.
Wasn't the short trip with Nan in your last one?
No, because I knew this was coming out last, so this would be my last one.
Why is that then, Gary?
Because I'm old and haggard and have used up all my Doctor Who-ness, and just think it's time to move on. And I wanted to go out on a nice big story. And I've always wanted to do this Zabi Minotra thing. And so this was a good opportunity to go, yep, this will be my last one.
Who wrote the one in the annual? Do you know?
I would think it was either David Whittaker or Bill Strutton himself, but I'm not entirely sure. I have at the back of my mind that it was Strutton, but that might be wrong. It might have been David Whittaker.
It's a kind of interesting, as a legacy goes, because, I mean, you've obviously had you had a strong legacy through various media formats with Doctor Who, you know, and the show, for you to finish off on a story which hasn't been celebrated, but certainly has really strong, significant connections to the roots of the show and its origin and where it was at that time.
Yeah, I just think The Web Planet is a bloody amazing piece of television for 1965. I'm just being shown by Scott that it was David Whittaker that wrote the comic, it's 1965. It's a Doctor Who story of six parts with no other humans in it other than the main cast. All shot through Vaseline. I mean, you just can't get better than that, really. I just thought it was so adventurous for its time. There's nothing else on television around the sort of early 60s that would have ever dared do anything like the Web Planet. Star Trek, you know, a year later comes along, and they didn't have the Brit, and I love Star Trek, but it didn't have the imagination to say, let's do an entire story set on a sort of no sky background of so it's just stars and planets in the distance, which is unusual in any science fiction thing, and all our aliens in it will be insects. I thought it was fantastic. I love it, and I just think it's a great example of what made Doctor Who so good back then and is still so good today, is that breadth of imagination and daring that the production team did back then. And it made Doctor Who stand out against everything else at the same time. It's a show that has always been daring. It's a show that has always taken leaps with both technology and storytelling. And somehow that seems kind of appropriate for tying into a computer game that was taking gaming to the next level.
But Gary, you've taken it a step further. You've gone for the annual, which is an even more trippy story in a lot of ways than the actual Web Planet.
So that's mad, and I like doing mad things. Really.
It is a mad ending for your legacy, then, if you go for that.
Please don't say it's my legacy. It sounds like it should be written on a gravestone. Orphans of Polyoptera, Gary Russell's legacy on a nice gravestone with a little carved Zabi and Minotra on either side of it. Scott's sitting here making notes and thinking, right, we'll do that.
Would there be any chance then? I mean, this is something which I hope, and I know Big Finish have done it a lot. But, you know, are there any particular casts that you'd like to get on board? Because talking about the Minotra, and I'm thinking, you know, William Russell is always absent. I don't know if he's still going with Big Finish now, isn't he? They just announced him doing another one with him. Is there any chance that there's sort of, is there any particular actors that you would like to get involved in this? Like maybe William Russell?
We'd really like to get one of the doctors in, and we have plans for that, for sure. We've actually, you know, one of the ideas we've been batting around has been doing something with the Paternoster gang, like Dan Starkey or something like that. Yes, I think it'd be a lot of fun. It's one of the things we've been talking about doing. I really feel strongly that we should do something with each of the doctors before we go back and do any repeats. Is it Goldberg?
Any particular ones that the writers would like? Any particular and how would you do? Would you go for the sort of actors who've been doing the Big Finish John Pertwee? George's short story. What was it? George. What was the
William Russell one?
I was thinking of the Gardeners.
Oh, Gardeners World. Yeah, that was Tim Trelawney. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, I'm afraid. Who does the John Pertwee?
Yes, he was good
stuff for Big Finish. He's brilliant.
Yes,
absolutely brilliant. He really captures
Ultraman as well. So
Sorry?
He's Welsh as well, is he?
Yeah. Welshman as well. So I mean, I don't know what Susan Lee feel about that kind of recasting, but I think it's great when you get an actor of that caliber to do it.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
And obviously they've got David Bradley doing First Doctor stories as well now at Big Finish. So I guess he might be an option for the future as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I think a story with the Sixth Doctor and Mel would be brilliant. I love anything to do with Sixth Doctor and Mel. I think is always exciting and interesting because Colin and Bonnie are so good. They're brilliant actors. They're brilliant at playing the Doctor and Mel still. They're game for stuff. You know, you could give them stuff in a computer game and they'll go for it. They'll enjoy it. They'll make the most of it.
And why no K-9? K-9's built for computer games, surely. Did K-9 and Romana in eSpace?
We had K-9 in Legacy. I love K-9, and we've been actually talking about doing some stuff with K-9. I think it's a great idea.
K-9's always popular.
In actors, you can get on board. I just want to direct.
No, I want to direct.
Yeah, do you know, honestly, we feel a bit like kids in a candy store. We weren't able to do it with Legacy. And so the fact that we're able to get the actors on board now has been a real treat. I mean, the Michelle Gomez session, which I just sat in on via Skype with New York, I had tears running down my face the whole time. I mean, she's just as funny in the studio as she is as an actress.
Has the, especially for Gary, I suppose, with Doctor Who having changed and mutated again even further since sort of 1989, does it feel like a different playing field? I mean, with the actors concerned and the potential for writing, and you know, now we're in a position, as you say, we've got video games which are very closely intermeshing with essentially audio visual adventures. Have you felt the differences? Does it feel like a different world now? And how would you describe that?
I now feel 110 years old.
Well, Gary, you are kind of that way to me, because when I was a young teenager, I was reading New Adventures Legacy and Doctor Who magazine. So to some degree...
No, I see, to me, it's all just Doctor Who, and the faces change and the production teams change and the production values might change. But actually, the one thing that Doctor Who has never changed from 1963 to 2018 is it's the story. It's the imagination of the stories. It's the fact that there's just no bad Doctor Who. I mean, there's occasionally badly made Doctor Who, but in terms of scripting and story, Doctor Who generally just is always good, and it's always different, and it has a unique voice, I think, in the history of television all around the world. There is simply no other show like it. You know, however good Star Trek is, there's other shows with people on spaceships. However good The X-Files is, there's always shows about people examining things. Doctor Who, there is simply nothing else to come remotely close to it. And I think the opportunity for all and any of us to have, you know, the tiniest sliver of input into that magnificent opus is a total honour and a total joy. I don't think it's changed. I think so long as good storytelling wins out, which it always does, it will always be Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Well put.
Wow. Well, I'm...
Put his notes down, it's fine.
Doctor Who Infinity, by the time you hear this podcast, will be out for you to play on Steam, on Windows. Is it on Mac as well?
Yes, Mac as well.
On Windows and Mac, and it's out on Android at the end of August.
Android and Apple at the end of August.
Android,
yeah.
And iOS, iPad and iPhone at the end of August. So a very big thank you to Gary Russell and Scott Hancock and George Mann and Susan and Lee Cummings. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lovely to talk.
It's been great, and all the best with Doctor Who Infinity.
This is a Beyond Casterbury's podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbury's.com.